first of all, you shouldn't marry someone that's not a believer. But if you do find yourself married and you become a Christian, now you're with a non-believer, you don't leave that non-believer. Now, if they leave you, you're not in bondage, but you should remain committed because God holds that marriage as sacred and sanctifies it. And yet there are some challenges. And I think last time we really looked at that heart of what it all boils down to is that sometimes we get in that mentality that we can never be happy unless our mate is saved. You can never be happy unless we're on the same page and we've got this wonderful marriage. And the fact is, you may not have a great marriage. But God promises things to you individually. And I got an encouraging letter, and I didn't get a chance to ask about permission to read it. I'm sure she won't mind, and I'm going to not use the names so it wouldn't put her on the spot. But it was a wonderful letter, actually. She says, being married to an unbeliever, your Sunday's message spoke loud and clear to me again, because we're talking about this on Sunday. And thank you for reminding me that in Christ my life is fulfilled. My husband is a great guy. I love him dearly. And our marriage is great. We've been married for, you know, X number of years, but he's a workaholic. No time for church, no time for God. Doesn't think reading God's word is necessary and says stupid people wrote the Bible and many other things. And as I listened to you yesterday, I know always the Lord is after my heart. Nothing should stop me from having a fulfilled life in Christ. And I know the enemy would love to use my husband's unbelief and all the things he says to cause separation in our lives. But many times the Lord just speaks to me, just be quiet. I do want the fruits of the Spirit to be alive in my heart. Even if my husband doesn't come to the Lord, I want to kill him with kindness, like you said yesterday. And as Scripture says, the kindness of God leads to repentance. So I pray God's kindness and love overflows from me to him. Sometimes I know I'm not able, and I guess that's a good place to be because I call upon the Holy Spirit's help. Thank you again. I'm blessed to be part of Calvary and look forward to this year's Women's Bible Study. And you know, I think that a lot of women, especially in that boat, really get a lot of encouragement out of the women's studies because they can encourage one another. You need friends, you know, especially if your mate, that which is closest to your heart, doesn't share the same feelings and thoughts toward the Lord as you do. I mean, that's a very powerful thing. Well, we come to this section. By the way, marriage has been called a three-ring circus, you know. You've got the engagement ring, you've got the wedding ring, and then you've got suffering. No, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to throw that in there. Of course, I disagree with that. Picking up at verse 17. But as God has distributed to each one, now he just says, basically, you know, if the unbeliever departs, let him depart. You're not in bondage. How do you know, wife, whether you'll save your husband? How do you know, husband, whether you'll save your wife? And it seems like he totally shifts gears here. But actually, he's bringing in another illustration to talk about where you are called. There should be some contentment in your current condition. So he says, as God has distributed to each one, as the Lord has called each one, so let him walk. And so I ordain in all the churches. Was anyone called while circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. In other words, if you are called as a Jewish person, you still got Jewishness to you. You're not going to try to be un-Jewish. You know, you're not going to try to become something other than that. Was anyone called while uncircumcised? Let him not be circumcised. There was a movement that felt that, you know, you had to first become Jewish to become a Christian in the early church. All the early church was Jewish. And then when they started expanding out, there was this pressure by some of the Jewish believers. Well, wait a minute, these Gentiles can't just come in among us. Yeah, they got to be circumcised, they got to follow the law, and then they can become a Christian and believe in our Messiah Jesus. And yet he says, no, you're not, don't be circumcised. That's not it. Circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing, but keeping the commandments of God is what matters. See, the Lord always is interested in the heart. We look very quickly at the outer sign. So even the church makes such a big deal out of sometimes baptism. How you were baptized, when you were baptized, you know, the mode of baptism, sprinkling or dunking, and, you know, I mean, all of the different ceremony that goes with that, the classes for the baptism. I mean, there's so much stuff. And really, that's not the issue. It's the heart that the Lord is interested in. He says, were you called while a slave? Now, that was very common. There was a million slaves in Corinth. The Roman government had millions and millions of slaves. I mean, all the nations that they conquered, essentially, you know, that they had basically put all these people on the chopping block, so to speak, and sold them off and auctioned them off. It was a horrible type of a setup. There were laws governing it, though, and even in slaves, they had a right to marry, but it was a very difficult thing because your master could say, okay, you're married this year, but now I want you to be married. And they could switch things around. And how do you live as a Christian in that condition? So he says, if you're called as a slave, don't be concerned about it. But if you can be made free, rather use it. Paul had an interesting situation where he actually wrote to Philemon, who was a slave owner, actually, but he was a Christian. And he treated his slaves very well. And of course, the slavery back then wasn't based on race, it was often based on economics. But Onesimus was a runaway slave. And he found the Lord. And then came into contact with Paul, found out about his situation. Paul writes back to Philemon, whom he knew. He said, "Hey, I know your master." He writes him. And he basically, that's the letter in the Bible. The book of Philemon is Paul writing to his friend Philemon about this runaway slave, Onesimus. And essentially says, everything he owes you, charge to my account. Because you owe me, because I led you to the Lord. And he turns that around, but he says, I'm going to send him back, but I want you to accept him as a brother, because he is a brother in the Lord. And though, yes, he might come back still under that kind of condition, yet that was not anything in comparison to the relationship with the Lord. You see, Christ transcends whatever socioeconomic level or rung you're on in life. He transcends those needs. He transcends whether you're married or unmarried, or married in a bad marriage or good marriage. He transcends all of those conditions. He says, "For he who is called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freedman." Amazing. "Likewise, he who is called while free is Christ's slave." You were bought with a price. Don't become slaves of men. I'm not speaking about the outer slavery that would have still been a part of it. Now, some really argue with Paul. How could you write this? You're almost legitimizing slavery. That's been a charge against the Bible for a long time. The very fact of it is this. Had Paul been a social activist against slavery, it would have crushed the opportunity for the gospel to go out into the world, because it would have been perceived as just a political movement, and it would have been crushed. You see, what God does, he changes the heart. And when the time was ripe, those people, in fact, by the way, right before the Civil War in our nation was this tremendous revival, one of the greatest American awakenings. There was a tremendous move to bring people back to the things of God and the Bible, and care about who God is, and even thinking about how they were renewed in their understanding of what was written in our own Constitution. That we're created in the image of God, you know, equal, free, and there's no distinction between black and white. And there was this sense that slavery was wrong. It just grew among the hearts of the people until eventually it overrode the political and economic interests of slavery. See, that's how God works. So you don't come to him with all a bunch of laws and rules and regulations to follow, and you try to meet that standard. You come to him as you are. "Lord, here I am." Whatever situation you find yourself in, and lo and behold, he does an amazing work in you. He changes the heart. And so you don't need all these rules. "No, you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that." You know what? You know in your heart, that's, you do what you would want others to do to you. It's like just ingrained in you. The law is written in your heart. The Holy Spirit empowers you to do it. So you're free, even though you might be in a slavery situation. You were bought with a price. Don't become slaves of men. You know what's significant about that? Is the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve. He modeled this life for us. Not being a slave of man, but serving. You see, you're free when you're serving from your own volition. But when you choose yourself in your own way, then you become a slave to fashion and fad, and you become a slave to what people think of you and so many other things you get entangled with. But Christianity transcends slavery. So he says, "Let each one," verse 24, "remain with God in the state in which he is called." Because what happens is this, and he's going to jump into now the unmarried and those widows. He's going to talk about that. But this transition point from talking about marriage to singleness, interesting. This is the problem. As soon as we ascribe to in our hearts and minds the thought that we can't be happy unless my spouse is a Christian or treats me better, or I'm not in this economic situation, or I can't be happy as long as I'm here, I'm in this situation, or I've got that problem. This is a lie exacerbated by the philosophy of this world that says you deserve to be happy. And so we think happiness is the goal, and as long as we do, we're enslaved to try to get there and we'd never reach it. It's a treadmill that you keep running and huffing and puffing, and it doesn't work. Essentially, when you realize you don't deserve to be happy, the world does not owe you anything. You owe God everything, and you can't even begin to get God to do anything for you, and you humbly accept your predicament and ask God for mercy. You know, it's funny, He delights to give you happiness, and He does it, and surprisingly does it, while you're right in the middle of that situation. And you go, wow. I mean, all this time I thought I had to get out of this situation in order to be happy. And the Lord's fulfilling me right now, where I am. That's amazing. And then, lo and behold, sometimes from that comes even the change in the circumstance. But by that point, you don't care because you're filled in Him. And you realize it's not about how much money I make. It's not about who I'm married to. It's not about my economic situation or my living situation. And this is essentially what Paul is going to say. And he's already said neither marriage nor singleness is more spiritual. Now, there are those that want to make singleness more spiritual. You know, that being celibate, you know, is a more spiritual condition. That is a total tradition of man. You can't find that in the Bible. Now, Paul happened to be single, but Peter was married. Paul even says, hey, I have a right to take a wife just like Peter and some of the other apostles. But he knew God had gifted him in that area to remain content while being unmarried. And in Paul's case, most likely he was loosed from a wife somewhere along the line. Maybe his wife left him when he became a Christian because she was, you know, watching him, this guy in line to become one of the most powerful teachers in Israel, a Pharisee of Pharisees, become a Christian. That must have just blown her mind. So here's Paul, and yet he's happy, despite being single, which, unfortunately, you know, there's so much focus on marriages and families that we talk about as in the church. Singleness is given less attention. And so let's take a look at what Paul is actually going to come up when all is said and done. There's four solid reasons here. Singleness is pretty awesome. It's a pretty great state. It's not as bad as you think. But just like he says, hey, if you're a slave and you can get free, great. And if you're single and the opportunity to marry and you're burning in passion, as he already said, then it's better to marry than to burn in passion. That option's open to you. Let's take a look at this. Verse 25. Now concerning virgins. I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in His mercy has made trustworthy. No commandment in the sense that, you can't say, well, he's not inspired to write this, but rather that marriage and singleness is this area of freedom that you have. You're free to get married, you're free to remain single. So there's no commandment either way what you should do with your life in that regard. So that's why he says, I have no commandment from the Lord concerning singles in this, but I give judgment as one whom the Lord in His mercy has made trustworthy. I suppose, therefore, that this is good because of the present distress, that it's good for a man to remain as he is. That is the present distress. What's the present distress? Well, here is Paul's situation. He's not talking about marriage's distress. Well, it does remind me of there was a marital tension in a household, and a friend was trying to give some counsel to another friend about what to do about it. In the course of the conversation, he mentioned to him, he says, you know, a lot of times God speaks to us through our wife. His friend looked at him kind of strange and says, wow, I didn't know God used that kind of language. I'm sorry. That's another bad joke. Sorry. I just want to make sure you're with me here. All right, that was... That crashed. Back to the Bible. See, I do good when I stick to the Bible when I get off of it. You know, Pastor, that was pretty bad. Okay, good. All right, let's move on. Due to the present distress. What was the present distress, really? It was the Roman persecution. It was a very difficult scenario in Corinth, especially being married in a slavery situation, as most of the marriages were. Remember, there were the four levels of marriages. There was the slave marriages, which really had very little rights. Then there was the arranged marriages, you know, where the father arranged with the daughter. There was the noble marriages, which approximated our marriages. And then there were the common law marriages, you know, that if you lived together, then you were considered marriage. But there was a lot of slave marriages. There was a lot of persecution. In fact, 10 years after Paul writes this letter, guess who comes on the scene with a diabolical plot against the Christians? Your friend and mine, Nero. Bad guy. Tremendous persecution. Killing Christians right and left. In fact, he even would grab Christians, take them, cover them with oil, and light them up as human torches to light his garden at night. He was one evil man. Satanically inspired, no doubt. So it was a very difficult thing. You see, if you're single and you're facing that kind of persecution, that's one thing. But when you're married and you're seeing someone do damage to your wife or your husband, that is so much more torture. So Paul says, in light of the present distress. So this is one good reason. Now, in this case, in our nation, this does not apply as much, obviously. There are other factors, though. You know, I think of when he says, if you're bound to a wife, don't seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Don't seek a wife. That there is this need, in a sense, to enjoy your singleness. If you're single or if you're married, to be content to remain married and not seek to change your situation. This is essentially what he's basically saying. He says, what remain in that condition, you're called. The idea there is where you're called. What were you called as? Now, some of you may be young Christians and may not even know where you stand in regard to marriage and divorce. You might have been divorced a number of times and married a number of times, and now you're in between, you know, husbands. You're single now, and you found the Lord as a single. Well, that's what you are. If you found the Lord as a single, you're a single. You don't go back to your previous marriage. You're remaining in that condition in which you were called. As he says, are you loosed from a wife? Don't seek a wife at this point. Are you bound to a wife? Don't seek to be loosed. If you found that you got married three or four times and then you come to the Lord while you're married in your third or fourth marriage, you don't leave that marriage to go back to another scenario. Or even if they're not a believer, you don't leave that marriage, as he'd already stated, you don't leave your unbelieving mate. You remain there. You see, but even, notice verse 28, and I love this. He says, but even if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Now, some people will claim that remarriage is never possible. And quite frankly, that's impossible to maintain, because he just makes a difference here between a virgin and someone who's not a virgin. If you marry, who's you? Well, whoever it is, it's not the same as if a virgin marries. If you marry, you haven't sinned. And if a virgin marries, you haven't sinned. So this one's not a virgin. Obviously, they've been married before. Remarriage is possible. There are biblical bases for a remarriage, obviously, if your mate dies. But also if there's a biblical divorce, as Jesus described about adultery. There is that out. However, I believe in many ways, we've already talked about that on Sunday, the idea there is, are we talking about adultery that happened or is happening? There is a big difference. You know, if you find out about adultery that happened, and your mate is repentant, and you do the math. You can go by the letter of the law yourself, or you can do what the Lord calls you to do. Maybe forgive. Now, if it keeps happening, you know, there's a problem. You need to get some counsel on that and find a good game plan of how to deal with that situation. But here, you haven't sinned. If it's a biblical divorce or there's, you know, you're a widow, you haven't sinned in marrying. If you're a virgin, you haven't sinned. But notice what he says. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh, and I would spare you. Trouble in that present distress. However, also in our nation, word trouble, by the way, literally means pressure. A lot more pressure. What causes a lot of pressure in our nation? Not persecution. You know what stresses marriages out in our culture? Self-centeredness. We have so many choices and options. We have too many options. That's what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. Because of their abundance, pride set in. Their idleness and their pride bred so many other sins. And in America, that adds a lot of stress on committed relationships, because there's always options. You've got transportation options to get to other places. You can conceal relationships with other people. You can sneak around and use ways you can fulfill yourself and not be really committed. And there's so many temptations out there. So you've got to become aware that marriage is one of these things where if you're struggling as a single and you really feel marriage is going to solve a lot of the problems you have, you know, perhaps selfishness or pride or immaturity, I'm going to tell you, all those things will only be magnified in marriage. That's what marriage is. It's an amplifier. It's a magnifier. Whatever your problems are, I've always said it this way, if you're a self-centered slob as a single, you'll be 10 times that as a married person. You've got some life lessons to learn, I think, because marriage will amplify what you are. It's not going to solve your problems. You've got to deal with those things. And I think contentment is a very big key for singles. So anyway, Paul basically says, number one, good reason to remain single because of the present distress. Yet, if you remarry, you haven't sinned. If your virgin marries, she hasn't sinned. But you might have trouble in the flesh, and I'd spare you. But then secondly, he says in verse 29, but this I say, brethren, time is short. So that from now on, even those who have wives should be as though they had none. And those who weep as though they didn't weep. Those who rejoice as though they didn't rejoice. Those who buy as though they didn't possess. And those who use this world as not misusing it. For the form of this world is passing away. You see, here is the problem. It's a matter of priority. Marriage can sometimes mess with your priorities. And here's what happens in a marriage situation. If you're married, you've got to be careful that you don't put so much emphasis on your marriage. You almost deify it. That your eyes are so much on your mate. You put your mate on the pedestal, that your happiness is wrapped up in this mate. The Bible tells us to set our mind on the things above where Christ is seated. So as a single person, understand that it can be a major problem now, because now your focus is on that person. And of course, it still could be a problem as a single person. Your focus is on the hope of finding that person. And that your whole focus is there. It's just wrapped up in having a nice life here. You're longing for that American dream, you know, to be married, have a couple of kids. You know, that ideal, that idyllic view that some people have that really does not exist. There's an idyllic view of marriage that some have that I believe totally disorients singles and then disillusions them when they get married. And they find out who they got married to. It's like, what am I going to do with this selfish person? Others are terrified to make a commitment because of the potential pain. But yet, time is short. That's the point. You've got to put it in this perspective. Marriage is important. But God should come first in your life. If marriage takes your eyes off of God, then something's wrong. If the hope of getting marriage has you so twisted that you can't think about serving the Lord, then something's wrong. You see, if your eyes are on the problem, as in weeping with those who weep, if your eyes are on the pleasure, as, you know, rejoicing with those who, as those who didn't rejoice, or if your eyes are on temporal things, such as, you know, those who buy as those who didn't possess, see, the idea there is whatever you possess, whatever your pleasure, whatever your pain, this is all temporary. If your eyes are too much on that, you've got to hold lightly, is the point. Paul says, you know, I discipline my body. I'm getting ready for a race. If you were getting ready for a race, a marathon or a triathlon, you were priming yourself up for that. You're getting in shape for that. You're going to change your diet. You're not going to be looking at Baskin-Robbins ice cream the same way. You're going to look at it, poison. That'll keep me from my goal. I ain't touching that stuff. Krispy Kreme donuts, I'd love you any other time. But I've got my mind right now on this goal. I mean, it was out when I was in wrestling and I wanted to win. I looked at all the food that my friends were eating and, come on, man, have some. I'd be like, that's cool. I'm starving. I'd love to. But I wanted that goal more than I wanted to satisfy that need. And so essentially, this is what Paul is saying. Just realize who you are. Marriage, singleness, these are temporary. We've all eternity to celebrate. One short hour in which to work. So even those who are married, live as you're not. Not that he's saying live, you know, like a swinging guy. What he's saying is live that you're not putting so much weight on this marriage that that's everything. By the way, I've seen couples when they get so inward that all they're focused on is gazing into each other's eyes. They begin to hate each other very quickly. Because if you have no vision, without a vision, the people perish. After a while, those beautiful brown eyes that you stared into, there's nothing in there. You know, it's like you're looking, like, what am I doing? What is the purpose? It's all romantic at first, but what's the point? What is your vision? You see, we've got to have a vision as people. That's what we need. And I see a lot of marriages with no vision. They just, that's the end. I got married. I've arrived. This is the goal in life. Is it? Well, you're going to be depressed if that's your goal. Guarantee it. So the purpose, the form of this world is passing away. The end of all things is drawn near, Peter tells us. As for man, his days are like grass. As the flower of the field, he flourishes. When the wind passes over it, it is no more, says the Psalm 103. The world is passing away in its lust, but the one who does the will of God abides forever. So here's the thing. If marriage makes you so bonded to this world, then it's a stumbling block. So where are we with this? Are we in the same scenario that Paul is? The form of this world is passing away. Well, in that point, of course, the form was very transient. The Roman persecution was going to change everything for hundreds of years. It wasn't going to be the same. Well, in our scenario, what's different? I mean, we live in very troublesome times, perplexing times. I think we need to be ready as Christians that anything can happen anytime. Are you ready? You know, I'm not talking about being a survivalist in case an atomic bomb goes off somewhere and, you know, you've got this bunker and this shelter and your food supplies. You know, that'll be the least of your worries in preparation, I think. I'm talking about, are you ready to tighten the belt and be ready when times get tough to follow the Lord? Or will you crumble because you've so pampered your flesh your whole life that you couldn't even begin to lift a finger to follow the Lord when things get rough? That's what Paul is basically saying that he wants to avoid, because if you get to that point of just looking at how life's got to please you and then something else happens like a 9/11 and it totally changes your world, you're going to cave in. I'm hoping that when the next 9/11 happens, and notice I said when, I'm hoping that when that happens, that you people are ready to make a difference and be active to reach out to people who aren't ready and give them some spiritual guidance and counsel and encouragement and strength. But if you aren't preparing yourself now, then you're going to be one of those that we're going to have to take the time to minister to and help along and nurse along when you should have been ready to help many others. This is what the Lord wants. He wants our focus to be out there. Now, the third reason he gives for singleness, which is very important, is verse 32. He says, but I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of this world, how he may please his wife. Do you know, there is a certain level being married that you have to make up your mind to, that you can't just be the same way. You know, when I was a single guy, I could live in the most, you know, raunchiest place. It didn't matter. You know, it was a nice apartment. Didn't matter. I'm not even there anyway. I'm out there doing things. You know, I'm serving the Lord. I'm active. You know, my life is outside of that. That's a place to sleep. I don't care about that stuff. You get married and I can't think that way anymore. My wife, she wants to nest. She wants a nice little place. And that's normal. There's nothing wrong with that. She's not less spiritual. That's what God has given her, because she's going to be a mother and raise children, and she wants the best for them. It's just the natural understanding. And Paul's saying in the present distress, you're going to be worried about things that are going to be totally non-essential. But when you get married, you've got to take care of those things. And you have more business to take care of with a mate and children. It's much easier to live as a single in that sense. The time that you need to put into a marriage, the affections of the Lord that you need to, you know, focus on, the attention, how expensive it is. And of course, the weaknesses of your mate can greatly affect you. There's so many factors that make singleness quite desirable in some respects. So essentially, you still have, again, at the end of the day, the freedom to marry or not marry. You got to think it through. There's nothing wrong with remaining single if the Lord calls you there. If you're keeping yourself pure and following the Lord and serving Him, that's awesome. Now, if you have that gift to do that, that's great. If you don't have that gift, if you're really praying, oh God, I'd love a mate, I want to give you some advice on this as a single. Get a vision for what God has for you as an individual first. Get an idea of what He's calling you to be. And pursue that. And as you pursue the Lord's will in your life, you know, what I found when I was focused on finding someone, it seemed like it was just a miserable time in my life. I'm always asking, is this the one? I'd meet a girl, is this the one? I'm in the back of my mind, I wonder if this is the one. Yeah, I could see myself with her. You know, yeah. Maybe this is the one. And I, you know, and then you try to just strive. And finally, the Lord burned me by, you know, this girl that I thought she was the one. The Lord just let me get my heart out on the sleeve a little too much. And then I got hurt. And then I didn't want to look at another female the rest of my life, you know, I thought at the time. And I decided I'm just going to enjoy being a single. I'm going to enjoy my sisters in the Lord. I'm not going to look at the more beautiful ones or the less beautiful ones any differently. We're all sisters in the Lord. And I'm going to treat them all as my sisters and not have any interested love. You see, there's that old word that sometimes we don't understand when the old timers used to say a disinterested love. A disinterested love is a good love. It's a love you're not interested in what you're getting out of it. You're just giving. So you can love the attractive, the unattractive, the annoying, the unannoying. I mean, you can love everyone because God has given you that love. And now you're loving. And this is what He's done in your life. And you're not interested in what you're getting in return of it. This is what the goal is, where the Lord wants to bring us to. And so essentially, you know, when you make up your mind like that, and this is kind of what happened to me. Point happened where I finally made up my mind, I am going to enjoy being a single following the Lord. If the Lord wants me to remain single the rest of my life, so be it. I'm going to follow Him. It seemed like as soon as I made my mind up and I began living that, I met the most amazing sisters in the Lord that we became the best friends. I mean, just amazing. And I wasn't worried about anything anymore. Wasn't looking at people in the outer appearance anymore, just to put a whole new perspective on my life. For once, I was free. And it was such a delightful thing. And then one of those sisters that I made friends with, the Lord just kind of kept bringing her across my path. And one day, He opens my eyes and say, this is the one. I was like, I actually remember in a Wednesday night service, I was talking with her in the foyer. She was sitting, I remember exactly where she was sitting. There was some friends next to her, and I'm standing there, and you know, I'm thinking, well, we're going to go grab something to eat with a bunch of us after church. And all of a sudden, I was about to say something, and I heard the Lord say, this is the one. And I literally went, really? Just like that, out loud. She's looking at me like, what are you doing? And it was the wildest thing because He just snuck up on me. Now, I didn't know. She knew all along that I was the one. She already knew that. It's like I was slow to figure it out. But God had to sneak up on me because, you know, I'd already gotten ahead of myself before. So this one, I was just very careful. And it was so cool because then it was just one thing. I was, all right, you know what? If she's it, then I'm going to go to the next level and I'll talk to her about it. And it was like it was mutual and one thing led to another. And eventually we were married. But you know what, the thing of it is, it was just an enjoyable time. Now, I find out later, every time I'd get together with her, you know, we go places or we do something together, I would always tell her, isn't it great to be single and serving the Lord? You know, I just wanted her to know, I'm not going to lead you on. I'm not thinking of anything. It's just we're brother and sister in the Lord here. And it was a freeing thing to be that. Although, because she knew I was the one that used to bother her, it was freeing for me. Used to bother her, but you know she'd take it to the Lord too. And the best thing is she never let on that she was like, you know, knew that I was the one and that God had spoken to her and that she loved me. She never let on, so then she would put that trip on me, you know, kind of like that weirdness sets in, you know. It's like, oh no. You know, it's a wild thing. You know, a lot of these thoughts come back to me as I was thinking about this whole aspect of singleness. And I taught the single studying a church that I was an associate in California for about 4 years. And it was an awesome time to encourage singles. You know what? Use that time and energy for the things of God. Because you know what? You have a single person, whether male or female, and they're all looking, Lord, I want that godly mate. You know, I got news for you. Where are you going to find that godly mate? Well, yeah, okay, you're coming to church. That's a good thing. But where are you going to really find that godly mate? When you find people that have finally made up their mind, I'm going to serve the Lord. What you find is that those are the ones that have made up their mind. They've got the right perspective. They're putting the Lord first. Those are the ones that are going to do best for your soul. They're going to be the best wives and the best husbands because they've made up their mind. Not the wishy-washy guys that aren't involved or committed in anything and they're not doing anything. They're just coming to church hoping to run into a nice woman. Or the wishy-washy girls who are thinking the same, you know, they're not really serving anywhere, they're really uncommitted anywhere, and they're just hoping for a nice guy. No, that you've missed something there. This is the whole goal for singleness right here in verse 35. He says, he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. Verse 32, I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. That's the goal, pleasing the Lord. And this is the key. Now, verse 35 essentially ties it all in and says, this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you. There's no leash here. There's no requirement. There's no commandment. But what is proper? He says that you may, and this is your goal, serve the Lord without distraction. Now, in my case, I found that when the Lord added Karen to me as a helpmate, it's like my ministry just grew. I matured so much. I grew so much. It seemed like everything just came so much easier. She was really helping me spiritually. Now, a lot of guys, you want to help me. Simple question. What on earth are you doing for heaven's sake that needs help? What on earth are you doing for God's sake that He would impart one of His godly ladies to you to help you? If you're not doing anything that needs help, enough said. Because if the goal is serving the Lord without distraction, that's where we want to be. Whether single or married, that's the goal. I found that in marriage, you know, with a godly woman that I knew, and I used the term low maintenance for my wife in a spiritual sense. I always talked about her being a low-maintenance woman. Why? Because I never had to worry about whether she was going to follow the Lord or honor the Lord or obey the Lord. She was a godly woman. And I was second in her life to the Lord. And that was important to me. I was second. If I was first, it would have been a big problem. But she put the Lord first. She feared the Lord. And you know what's amazing is that was such a blessing to me. It helped me so much. I never had to worry about her walk with God because she wanted to serve the Lord. And whether married or single, that was our focus and that was our heart. Undivided attention to serve the Lord. That's the thing. Now, this would be naive when he says to serve the Lord without distraction. It would be naive of me to say this is possible for a single without talking about some of the particular problems of single living in our culture. Number one, dealing with those desires for companionship. Very powerful. You have to deal with those desires. You have to. I mean, I remember many times I'd be tempted. Oh, there's a pretty girl. You know what? She's a sister in the Lord. And I'm not going to gravitate over on this side of the sanctuary where she's hanging out with her friends because that's interest for me. And I'm interested because she's pretty. And I'm going to just be right here where God has put me. And I'm going to talk to these people. And I just felt I wanted to be a brother to my sisters, whomever the Lord put in my path. I avoided purposely going in places that were going to benefit me personally, like meeting this type of person, or I'm going to find myself, you know, manipulating to make sure wherever she sits down, I'm going to try to sit behind her. So when the pastor says, get up and say hi to somebody, oh, hey, how you doing? You know, you're right there. Oh, you can manipulate. I know the games. I was there. Not that you people would do that, of course. I know that. But, you know, the point is, it's like you have those desires and you've got to keep, in a sense, preaching to yourself. No, I'm going to trust the Lord. No, I'm going to put the Lord first. No, I'm going to... And you've got to deal with those desires. Loneliness and depression. See, there's a loneliness there sometimes. You know, you look around and sometimes Satan says, oh, look, see, they're all happily married. And you know, you're alone. And he messes with your mind on that. And that simply isn't the case because, let me tell you this. If you're single and you're lonely, you don't even know what loneliness is until you're married to somebody that you have no fellowship with. Now that's loneliness. Now you have to, both of you, take those lonelinesses to the Lord and the Lord will fill you. But don't think that marriage is going to answer the loneliness. It may not. If you marry unwisely, striving. You also need to, and I believe this is the key for a single, press on to agape love. That is that disinterested love, that no strings attached love, that I'm going to be a brother to you love. I want to be a blessing to you. I'm not worried about what I'm going to get to you. See, the world's love is I need you love. I can't live without you love. And all our songs are based on that love. That's not love. That's lust. That's need. That's craving rather than giving. World's twisted. Learning to love with brotherly kindness. Then, of course, you've got the pressures of your friends. You're not married yet? What's the matter with you? And then your married friends, they get married and then they don't invite you over as much anymore because you don't fit into the couples clan. And you know what? Those types of things, you know, I think as couples, you really need to be sensitive to singles. You know, they should not be excluded from your list of friends just because they're single. By no means you should do that. All the more, there should be a symbiotic relationship between the married and the single people in this fellowship. There shouldn't be this disenfranchisement being single. And then, of course, you've got the sexual desires that you have to keep under control. You know, but just know this, lust won't stop when you get married. You'll have greater temptations. You will. Far greater temptations came to me as a married man than ever as a single man. You know, how a question of as a brother keeping pure with your sisters is that's it. I mean, it's your sister in the Lord. What do you do with a sister? Not just that you wouldn't get intimate with a sister, but rather you would also protect her honor. If you're a brother, you protect the honor of your sister. You protect her honor. And that's how you ought to be looking, and that's why you should never defraud each other. You know, if you're a man that says, you know, you're putting pressure on a woman to get intimate before marriage, you're not only not protecting her honor, you're living very selfishly to do that. You're dishonoring her. You're defrauding her. That's wrong. That's so far from love. That's just filling your own needs. And it doesn't matter what words and fancy words you put it under. I know God has called us to be together, and you know, we really should, you know, see if we're compatible in this area. Because I know God has called us, you know, and I really want, you know what? Take a hike. That's what you got to tell him. Just have a glass of cold water handy. When he waxes all smooth talking and you know where it's going, just give him a glass of water in the face. That'll take care of it. The idea is undivided attention, and that's what he says here. So this is what he expresses in verse 35, not to put a leash, but so you're undistracted. And then, of course, in verse 36 through 38, there's a thing that probably wouldn't fit in our culture. Again, this isn't a command from the Lord because it fits the various cultures. But here he says, if any man thinks he's behaving improperly toward his virgin, that is his daughter, if she's past the flower of youth and thus it must be, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin. Let them marry. Nevertheless, he who stands steadfast in his heart, having no necessity but has power over his own will and is so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin, does well. So then he who gives her in marriage does well, and he who does not give her in marriage does better. That was a father's prerogative in that culture, of course. Our society is a little bit different. Obviously, you know, when a child is 18, they're under the legal opportunity to marry. Certainly you want to honor your parents, and I'll tell you one thing, parents know a lot more than you realize in regard to that. But at the same time, you can follow the Lord on that. But ultimately, verse 39 says, a wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives, but if her husband dies, she's at liberty to be married to whom she wishes. And underline these next four words, only in the Lord. But she is happier if she remains as she is, according to my judgment, and I think I have the Spirit of God. Again, there was no compulsion for this. This is Paul's view in regard to the present state, and he even says this, you're free to marry, you haven't sinned, you're free to not marry. But there is a certain time period in which it could be more advantageous to remain single. And in any case, the lesson is learning how to love without that selfish interest that so twists things. I want to close with a true story that I thought was pretty powerful. Dr. David Ausberger tells the story of a Lieutenant Blanchard. He was a young soldier in basic training in Florida during World War II. One evening, he wandered into the Army library and found a book to read. And as he worked his way through the book, he was quite impressed, not with the content of the book, but with the notes penciled in the margins. And the feminine handwriting showed insight and understanding as well as a touch of tenderness. He flipped to the front of the book and found the name of the previous owner, a Miss Hollis Maynell. Blanchard did some research, found out her address was up in New York. He wrote a letter to her, you know, told her he was touched by her comments on the book. And the next day he was shipped overseas. And for 13 months, the two of them corresponded. And during that time, they began to open their hearts to each other. It soon became apparent they were falling in love. And one time he asked her to send him a picture. And she refused, saying that if he really loved her, it didn't matter what she looked like. Finally, the day came when they were to meet. They arranged to meet each other in Grand Central Station in New York at 7 p.m. on a particular night. She told him, "You'll recognize me by the red rose I'll be wearing on my lapel." 1 minute till 7, a soldier straightened his uniform as people walked toward him. His heart was pumping with anxiety and anticipation for the long-awaited moment. "A young woman was coming toward me," he says. "Her figure was tall and slim. Her blonde hair lay back in curls and from her delicate ears. Her eyes were blue as flowers. Her lips and chin had a gentle firmness. In her pale green suit, she was like springtime come alive. I started toward her, entirely failing to notice she was not wearing a red rose. And I moved in her direction. A small, provocative smile curved her lips, almost as if to say, 'Going my way, soldier,' which she did murmur. And uncontrollably," he says, "I took another step closer to her, and then I saw Hollis Maynell. She was standing directly behind the girl, a woman well past 40, graying hair tucked under a worn hat. She was a little more plump. Her thick ankled feet were thrust into low-heeled shoes. She wore a red rose on the rumpled brown lapel of her coat. And the girl in the green suit was walking away quickly. I felt though I was being split in two. So keen was my desire to follow that young woman, yet so deep was my longing for the woman whose spirit I had truly companioned with, and she upheld me in the long months overseas. And there she stood. Her pale, plump face was gentle and sensible. I didn't hesitate. My fingers gripped a small, worn, blue leather copy of the book which was able to identify me to her." He said to himself, "This wouldn't be love, but it would be something precious, something perhaps even better than love, a friendship for which I had been and must ever be grateful." "I squared my shoulders," he said, "and saluted and held out the book to the woman, even though while I spoke, I felt choked by the bitterness of my disappointment. 'I'm Lieutenant John Blanchard. You must be Miss Maynell. I'm so glad you could meet me here. May I take you to dinner?'" The woman's face broadened into a tolerant smile. "I don't know what this is all about, son," she answered, "but the young lady in the green suit who just went by begged me to wear this rose on my coat. And she said if you were to ask me out to dinner, that I should tell you she's waiting for you in the big restaurant across the street, that this was some kind of a test." He passed the test. Would you? You know, that's really a big test for us in our culture, isn't it? We put so much stock on appearance. And yet sometimes we fail to see what God has so much richer than that. Not that you're going to be with somebody that you don't find attractive, but you will find attraction perhaps in things that you may not have noticed before. Who knows how God can answer? If you're single, you know what? You got an opportunity to put the Lord first. Trust Him. If you're married, you're married. Trust the Lord even in that situation, even if it's tough. You never know how God is going to unfold this because eternity's all before us, yet one short hour in which to labor in this life that we might serve the Lord without distraction.